let's talk about humeral shaft fractures. Now, first of all, you should know that a lot of these can be treated non-operatively. There are different methods to do that. Functional bracing is the most popular method. As you know, popularized by Gus Sarmiento down at University of Miami. However, there are also other methods out there: hanging arm cast, long-term coaptation splinting, etc., which are other methods of definitive non-operative treatment. You should definitely be aware of what are the operative indications, and this is sort of like textbook stuff. You know, things like open fractures, multiple trauma, obesity perhaps, and pendulous breasts that you have a hard time controlling with non-operative treatment, gapping at the fracture site. So a lot of times if you have a transverse fracture with a big gap, that can be an indication to consider fixation. But for many cases, non-operative management's going to do pretty well. Keep in mind that non-operative management does not mean neglect. It means a deliberate non-operative approach in which you have, appropriate immobilization of the fracture. We oftentimes do coaptation splinting initially, but, functional bracing really means putting a patient in a brace that applies compression to the fracture site, often through a clamshell type device that, has to continually be tightened and adjusted, and through motion of the elbow and shoulder. And the thought is that, maintaining motion obviously is, for improved function, but also can assist with maintaining the fracture alignment and maintaining some muscle tone. So, non-operative management doesn't mean just doing nothing. It's almost more work. Patients got to set up their bed a certain way. You got to check X-rays more frequently. You have more explaining to do to the patient when it comes to, is the alignment okay? Is this, going to be a deformity later? Is this going to bother me? Am I going to look, weird with the way the X-ray looks? So it can be more tedious. Operative management. So, operative management, and the reason why you don't just do this for everybody is because, there are risks, namely radial nerve palsy. And that should be a good enough risk for you to think twice about just offering everybody an ORIF. And if you think, I wanted to stay away from that and I'll do nails, then you have to think that all your patients are going to get shoulder pain, which is a common thing, no matter how careful you are, opening and closing and dealing with a rotator cuff. And you don't really see retrograde humerus nails that often anymore, but obviously they would not get shoulder pain. But it's a technique most people are not that familiar with anymore. But in general, plate fixation tends to have a little bit of a better, or is a little bit more favorable, I guess, with surgeons who treat most of these. I think it's still controversial. I mean, I don't think nails are wrong. I think there's certainly good places for nails, but I think the average orthopedic trauma surgeon, if you were to ask them, what would you feel most confident, about in terms of, operatively managing a humeral shaft fracture, most of them will tell you plating. And I think, with plating you can get compression. The, biomechanics are a little bit different than they are in the lower extremity where we typically nail everything. And in the upper extremity we, radius ulna humerus, we tend to want to get compression and plate everything. It's just as a rule of thumb, I think. And nailing, I think, certainly can work out okay. But again, my preference is plating. If I have to fix these, I always tell the patients, look, there's always a risk you can have a radial nerve palsy. And by the way, that can happen with nailing. And the only thing is, with nailing, you have no idea where the nerve was, if it was in the fracture site or not, when you started passing your reamers and instrumentation. So you're just kind of flying blind a little bit and hoping it's going to be okay. Now with plating, there's a lot of surgical approaches. So you should familiarize yourself, be aware of these. We teach them in the cadaver courses. You know, you should know, you know, what are the anterior approaches, what are the posterior approaches. You know, commonly, I've got it down pretty much the two approaches that I use, which is, you know, an anterolateral approach, which is good for proximal fractures like a deltopectoral extending distally. You can either split the brachialis or go between the brachialis and brachioradialis. I usually split the brachialis. You know, in these cases, you don't really see the radial nerve very well. Now, if you have to get really, really distal into the distal humerus, you can't get that distal with the anterior approach. I've gotten pretty far down there. In those cases, you do have to kind of find the radial nerve and make sure you're not, tenting it or something as you get to the end of the plate. But generally, for proximal two-thirds of the humerus, that works well, the anterior approach. For the distal humerus, posterior approaches work well. And the other approach I said, you know, I've kind of down to two approaches. The other approach I use most frequently is the paratricipital tricep sparing posterior approach, right? And as opposed to the tricep split, which kind of lands you right into the middle of the deltoid posteriorly, the tricep sparing kind of, you know, gets you around it a little bit. So you can get a little higher. You can go from the very, very distal humerus all the way up close to the surgical neck. I mean, you're not going to be able to put screws up in the head, but you can kind of get up towards, you know, the axillary nerve, I guess, is your limit. So very extensile approach. It allows you to see the radial nerve, get it out of the way. Of course, getting it out of the way sometimes makes it go to sleep. So be prepared for that. So as I said, you know, plate fixation generally works. You know, there's a trend towards using plates, you know, 3-5 plates rather than 4-5 plates, more screws, you know, obviously smaller screws. I still generally like the 4-5 plates. I think 3-5 plates, I guess, are okay. Again, compression is really important. You don't want to leave gaps here. It's important when you fix these to sort of dictate where the radial nerve was on the plate. You know, for instance, it was crossing the fourth hole from the distal end of the plate. You want to also make sure that you are careful with their external rotation or sort of rotational stresses early on. I think that's one of the things people get into trouble with sometimes with early loosening, is too much rotational stresses. But, you know, of course, the advantage of fixing them is, you know, they get to move earlier and more confidently than they do when you do functional bracing. So, you know, that is when you're talking to a patient, should I have this fixed or not? Well, you know, if you have it fixed, you can be more confident about, you know, the alignment, not have to check x-rays as frequently, move them a little earlier, confidently, I should say. And, but, you know, you worry about, you know, nerve injury. Obviously, infection is always a concern as well. So those are some of the main things I think you need to know. Like I said, here's somewhere where you really need to be very familiar with the surgical approaches. Once you get down to the fracture, it's really standard AO techniques. You know, I think it's the fractures that can do well, you know, as long as you don't get into problems with nerve palsies. All right, thank you.